Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Yeah, I'm coming to you on a Monday, special Monday edition of the show. I am headed out of town for a couple days to Brooklyn, New York, and as luck would have it, and I did not realize this until today, it kind of crept up on me that Bellator is running a show, two shows this weekend, but one in New York City, Nassau Coliseum, coming up on Saturday night, Chael Sonnen versus Fedor Emelianenko. And of course, they're running the night before on Friday with Matt Mitrione and Ryan Bader in Connecticut. So we'll see. Maybe there's, I don't know what, if there's a press conference maybe on Wednesday or something like that. Maybe if I can, you know, sneak away from this work conference for a bit and check things out, we'll see what happens there. Maybe I'll see Chael Sonnen on the streets, the main streets of New York. Anyway, so I want to come to you because obviously all types of big stuff happened on Saturday night with UFC 229. The completely unexpected happened, of course, with the big post-fight melee between Khabib Nurmagomedov's camp and Conor McGregor's camp. And we haven't really come up with a name for this. I don't know if it's like, Terror at the T, T-Mobile Arena, Melee at the Mobile, something like that. There's been no good name for it. So certainly I'll take those names if you have them. But I wanted to kind of chat about this for a few minutes because obviously there's a lot of stuff coming in out of that. But also, I think people are getting a little bit more upset about this than they should be. And I want, for some perspective, I wanted to bring on old friend Dave Doyle of MMAfighting.com. He was on the desk for MMA Fighting on that night and was doing some of the stories and so on. And also, he understands the business. He understands pro wrestling. He understands MMA and boxing and all that. So we talked about that for about half an hour. So it's a little bit shorter podcast than usual. I'll just kind of give you some more quick hit thoughts right off the top, and then we'll get into the conversation with Dave. Is ultimately everything is going to be okay. I don't think this is going to be a major issue at all, as we've talked about and as we've seen in the almost 36 hours or so now that we're past this huge ordeal. These things happen in boxing more frequently than you might imagine. Riddick Bowe, Andrew Golota, that was one I saw mentioned. I remember I mentioned this on the podcast when Fan Man, if you remember Fan Man, came in and skydived and actually went into the ring. That was a whole thing. Granted, it was a little bit different, but that was just complete chaos. And let's see, Evander Holyfield or Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson, I think there were some issues there. So with big fights, I mean, all the time, these things just tend to happen. And, it's fighting. Emotions are high and obviously the trash talk and all that. But ultimately, things are going to be fine. And as I said on the interview here, which you'll listen to in a second, spoiler alert, is I think Khabib's going to get like a year. And I think he'll be stripped of the title. I think we'll get Ferguson and the winner of Diaz-Poirier for the lightweight title. I think McGregor is either then going to fight, depending on what happens in that fight, is going to fight probably either Nate Diaz a third time, or he's just going to wait for Khabib and then make that rematch a pretty big one as well. Or, maybe the Tyron Woodley fight happens or GSP. Something could be out of there. But, I think he's on a two-fight a year deal when it comes to like what he wants for a pace and what he wants for obviously a big event. So I think he's probably just going to kind of wait for that. But I think that's what happens in ultimately, if Khabib and Magomedov is out for a year, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. So we've seen it at the onset. It always feels like a year is, oh my God, a year is such a long time. And then our attention just goes to everything else in the sport. And all of a sudden, the rest of the group, the rest of the group kind of carries the load. And, it's like a year just flies by just like that. So not a huge deal, but he has to get something. And obviously his, I think the biggest penalty is going to come for his teammates, especially the guys that fight in the UFC. And, we'll see if Dana White holds true their promise that those guys are going to be done with the promotion. We'll see if that holds true. Anytime Dana White says, something is disgusting or, he's really emotional, we see what happens a couple days later. So as the week plays out, we'll get more and more info about that. But yeah, I expect a year suspension by the Nevada State Athletic Commission for Khabib and that to be handled by Christmas. It'll be retroactive. And then by next fall, he'll be right back in there for a huge fight, probably with Conor McGregor. And other than that, I mean, the show was obviously a lot of fun. It'll be most remembered for the big melee. And obviously, Conor McGregor got dominated in a lot of ways. Granted, he did win a round, but overall, he looked very similar to what it looked like in that first Nate Diaz fight. And that's what makes the potential of a rematch so interesting, is to see if he's going to make the adjustments and try to, be able to be able to make a difference in a rematch. And who knows? I mean, Khabib is so strong on the ground. It's going to be hard to kind of make that ground up. But, you know, stranger things have happened, especially when the stakes get even bigger and bigger. But, you know, when you hear people talking about the promotion and they keep asking Dana White, ask him at the press conference and about, you know, should he not include the bus footage or should he try to ramp things down? And it's hard to do that, right? I mean, what are you supposed to do in promoting a fight? And you're not trying to reach the hardcores or the people that are going to buy it anyway. You're trying to reach the people that haven't bought it. And by telling, I don't think telling either guy to tone the rhetoric down was going to help because they're just going to do what they're going to do. Not showing the bus footage, like, I get it, but it is kind of part of public record now. And I think it'd be kind of weird if they didn't show it because it did happen. And it's just kind of one of those things. And I think all of us make a kind of a social contract or a deal with ourselves that we know what we're getting into when we follow fight sports. And we know what we get into when we enjoy this stuff and talk about this stuff and print and write about this stuff and really just make it part of the experience is that these things do happen. They really do. The sport is littered with really bad people. The sport is littered with really good people. And I think you'll find that in almost any industry, but especially with fight sports, it's literally, we are paying our money. We are committing time. We are committing mind space to two people going in there, trying to beat each other up and do so for money. That's what it is. And we can try to make as many social contracts or whatever you want to call them and resolutions with ourselves that it is something bigger and it should be better and what have you. But at the end of the day, guys, it's pro fighting, and that's what it is. And I know that I can appreciate the, you know, some classic, so to speak, martial artist saying, you know, this is not martial arts. No kidding. This is truly sports entertainment. We make fun of WWE for using that term. That's not sports entertainment. This is truly sports entertainment. It is athletics, but it's also entertainment. That's the reason you have draws. That's the reason that people care about pay-per-view buys and ratings and TV deals and all this stuff. Ultimately, you rely on a certain group of people to move the needle. And if you don't have that, you're not in a good space. And things like this, as unfortunate as it is, they do move the needle. And ultimately, I don't think the UFC is going to be affected by this one bit. I don't think either guy is going to be affected by this one bit. I think McGregor actually came out of this a little bit better. Khabib's star, I think, increases maybe just a little bit as well, more notoriety. But ultimately, these things happen. I don't think this is going to be any major blemish on the sport, problems, anything like that. The people that are going to hate this or drop out of UFC for watching this, they were going to leave at some point anyway. And the rest of us will still be here watching, talking, and doing what we do. So with all that said, let's get into some more talking. It's a Sunday conversation with myself and Dave Doyle from MMAfighting.com. Enjoy. Well, I would say this is unexpected. I was planning on asking my guest at this time, I was going to ask him to come on here in a couple weeks, but it is Sunday, a rare Sunday recording of Josh Nason's Punch Out, but we are happy to welcome Dave Doyle back to the show of MMAfighting.com and Yahoo as well. And Dave, we'll start you out with the really tough questions, even though it's a day of leisure. What do you think of David Price?
David Price is not my favorite player ever to wear the Boston Red Sox uniform. How about yours?
Yeah, he's definitely not. When it comes to the postseason stud, he is the complete opposite. And for those that don't follow baseball, you probably have no idea what we're talking about. But yeah, I am. I'm still confident in this series, Dave. I'm actually heading down by pure luck to Brooklyn for a work conference next week. This week coming up. And both games obviously being played at New Yankee Stadium. So my hope was that going into this, that the Red Sox would just have like destroyed the Yankees. Fans would give up hope, cheap tickets, and so on and so forth. But as we go into Monday, it is tied at 1-1. And my confidence is still high, but I would be a lot higher if David Price actually done something of relevance on Saturday night. So yeah, it was out of all the things that happened Saturday night, somehow by the end of the night, that seemed to be like the least of my interest level, yeah. So to speak. Right?
Well, you know, the only thing, if I have to thank David Price for anything, is backhanded as a compliment we'll get. You know, the fact that he stunk out the joint immediately allowed me to completely tune out the remainder of the game and focus on the task at hand with UFC 229.
Very true. I had the game up on my laptop, YouTube TV, and then was watching the show on the big screen. So speaking of that show, and obviously people are listening to this definitely know what happened with pretty much everything, especially with the main event. And so we're sitting here talking at almost 6 o'clock East Coast time on Sunday night, and things are kind of like quieted down. Not a whole lot of news outside of what we learned last night, but you know, I know you were on the, I won't say the news desk, but you were doing a lot of the posts for the website, the written stuff, and I was as well for the Observer site. I think I posted the I was just, you know, planning to do the McGregor result after the fight ended, and all of a sudden just hell. the only phrase you can use is like all hell broke loose, right? And it was incredible to see. It was the whole thing was a spectacle, but it was like, the first thing I thought of, and it wasn't like I was like, you know, immediately disappointed or sad for the sport or anything like that. I was like, my God, this really has turned into boxing. And I just reflected back to, like, you know, Fan Man, when he flew in the stands during, I think it was the Bo Holyfield fight way back in the day. And I think it was Bo Holyfield. And obviously the melee.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I was thinking about Mike Tyson fighting Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it reminded me of in its own way.
And just, yeah, it felt like this, you know, a brawl you'd see after big boxing matches, not often, but obviously the ones that stand out. And that was my first thought. And I was just like, this is just incredible. This is just an incredible sight. And, when you're seeing all this happen, of course, you're just doing results and posting stories, just kind of doing some stuff. And then this thing happens. What's going through your head?
It was just, partly because, you know, this is going to be a little too, it might be a little too technical for our readers here, but I do the immediate fight recaps for MMA fighting and, you know, got my head down, like doing play by play and trying to turn it into a real story, you know, kind of in real time there. And Khabib wins and, you know, you're immediately starting to write okay, Khabib Nurmagomedov won this. And then, you know, as you're doing this, a brand whole new story that's way bigger than the fights breaking out in front of your eyes. You know, as to what it all means, I think, like, you know, you and I have both watched MMA and boxing and pro wrestling long enough to know that controversy sells, and that, you know, sure, you can sit here and tiss Khabib for what he did, and it certainly was wrong. But, you know, she'll point to me anywhere in combat sports history where an incident like that has actually made a combat sport smaller. You know, like, to go back to what we were talking to a little bit earlier, guess what? Mike Tyson was a convicted rapist who came back and bit his opponent's ear. And after everything all settled down, he was still a gigantic draw on pay-per-view. So, you know, I hate to say it, but you don't want to reward people for behaving like this. But in a business as amoral as fighting, guess what? We just got, wherever they go with this, we just got our next big, giant UFC 229-like events coming out of this. And I think the tell is that in the press conference, as Dana was doing his, you know, whole, oh, this is disgusting and horrible and blah, blah, blah routine, even in the middle of that, even in the middle of his performative pearl clutching, he still couldn't bring himself to say that he wouldn't book a rematch between Khabib and Conor. So, yeah, somehow I just instinctively knew all of that. I've been around long enough to know that, you know, everything that I just blabbed right there, like, okay, this just all unfolded in front of me in the span of about 3 minutes.
So that, honestly, you were the first. So when I was trying to think about who I wanted to talk to today about this, you actually the first person that came to mind, because you understand this, because you mentioned pro wrestling and boxing and all this stuff.
Sure.
And you know, again, some of the pearl clutching on I saw on Twitter. I was like, okay, like it's not like my first instinct. Well, I mean, no one got seriously hurt. It was a scene. It was something that obviously shouldn't have happened, and it definitely marred what should have been Khabib's, I don't want to say ceremonial moment, but his time to be like, I am the man. I did exactly what I said I was going to do. I took down the biggest star in the sport, possibly in sports history, and he is, I'm the man. And instead, this whole scene broke out, and McGregor's the loss, you know, it doesn't feel like a loss. It just kind of like evaporated away into this whole thing of what happened after the point. And yeah, I mean, here's the deal, right? That these two are going to fight at some point again. And this is people talk about, you know, things fall in Brock Lesnar's lap. Things really fall in McGregor's lap in a lot of ways as well. And I've talked about this before, like, you know, he's a big time. He is like a big game hunter when it comes to fights. Now he doesn't want to be one of the crowd. I've said this before, he's not going to fight Tony Ferguson unless Tony Ferguson can bring him, you know, a ton of pay-per-view buys and things like that. You're talking about the Nate Diaz's, the GSPs. He doesn't care about titles. He cares about, if I'm going to do this twice a year, I want someone in there that's actually going to be able to generate a ton of money for both of us. And now this fight, even though McGregor was pretty thoroughly beaten, and, you know, I mean, Nurmagomedov hit that hard right hand, and that was a big shock. And, you know, just it was, you know, Khabib dominated him. And even after that, he still tends to make, after that whole scene, which he didn't even instigate, maybe, I mean, if he made, say, $50 million for this thing, who knows? I mean, he could make 75. He could make more. I mean, that could be a massive, massive, massive pay-per-view, even though he was in a fight. He wasn't competitive. It's amazing. He still won out. He still wins.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, I mean, that's why Conor's brand is bulletproof. And, you know, I do feel like I have to stop a second and say, like, I don't want to gloss too much over what happened last night, just because that did come real close to being a scene where a lot of people got hurt. And I hope that the UFC, you know, has discussions on trying to tamp down the kind of the direction it's going in, because if it escalates, it really could get ugly. That said, so McGregor's brand he's been built on the fact he never claims that he's invincible. You know, he gets knocked down, he gets back up, he takes it's if you remove yourself from the situation for a second, like, it is absolutely insane on paper that he, having not fought in a mixed martial arts fight for 2 years, comes back and immediately says, "Oh yeah, Khabib, I want him." This guy who has spent his entire career mauling all of his opponents like an angry mama bear whose cubs have been threatened. Yeah, let me fight that guy. No tune-up fight, you know, nothing of the sort. So, you know, he gives himself a lot of breathing room to be able to lose and say, hey, I gave him my best shot. I'm coming back. You can knock me down. I'm going to get back up. And we saw that pay off in a big, 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 big way with Nate Diaz in the rematch. And, you know, in a really weird sort of way, Khabib kind of did Conor a favor in that no one is talking about the fact that he lost the fight in such a bad manner, such a one-sided manner. And given that, I think he comes – so Conor comes out of this unscathed. With Khabib, see, here's how I feel. With Khabib and – both Khabib and Conor, you've almost got like hey, we're on a wrestling podcast, so I'm going to use a wrestling analogy here. We've got – basically two like 1997 Bret Harts, where they're the heel to half the crowd, they're the face to half the crowd, and they both believe that what they are doing is correct. That Michael Hayes thing where Michael Hayes said, you know, the heel might be completely in the wrong, but he has to believe he's in the right. Yeah. That's absolutely what we saw from Khabib last night. And who can't identify on some type of gut level with the idea that I'm defending the honor of my father? You know, like, even if you disagree with his actions, like, everyone can kind of understand where he's coming from on that level. So I think, you know, if it was up to me to book their fights going forward, I don't think you go immediately back to Conor and Khabib unless WME is desperate for another big hit. I think you cross your fingers and sign Khabib against Tony and hope that, that the MMA gods finally give us that one, because I think Khabib's next fight is going to draw big. You know, there's enough buzz on this that it's going to be a major event no matter what. And I think you go back to Conor and Nate and finish off that trilogy. There's a shit ton of money to be made off of that. And it might even be stronger if Nate loses to Dustin Poirier, because you'd have the added element of both guys trying to come off of a loss. So if I was playing Fantasy Booker, I would go that route. And then if it's in the cards to do Khabib and Conor too afterwards, that's always kind of hanging out there.
Yeah. So here's how I think this whole thing is going to play out, just based on what we've seen historically and just, again, just kind of just trying to read the tea leaves going forward. And obviously with Nevada, with the State Athletic Commission, you know, they're not going to let this go completely unpunished, obviously, even though they stand to make a ton of money. Right. Once these rematches happen and so on. And I know that, you know, here's the thing. We're so desensitized now, or at least I am. I think most of us are, when Dana White says I'm disgusted with things and all that. I mean, you remember, obviously, he said that after the whole bus attack thing. And, I mean, everything was in the promo.
Right.
I mean, he's not that disgusted. He's, you know, he can do the song and dance. I'm sure he was bummed out because there was this kind of just black cloud hanging over this afterwards, and obviously there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that we don't know about. You know, he mentioned the governor, right. Governor went running and things like that. I mean, the governor of Nevada is not going to a UFC show and expecting to see a ballet or, you know, the Westminster dog show or something like that. Just, I think, obviously you didn't expect to see that, but here's what I think is going to happen. I think by Christmas, I think they're going to have a ruling on Khabib. I think he's going to get suspended for like a year, and we'll just throw that just a year. Right. So he's out for a year. UFC says, OK, this is convenient, obviously retroactive to the fight. And UFC says, OK, then we have to strip him of the title, and we'll see Tony Ferguson versus the winner of Poirier and Diaz. And then the winner of that may get, you know, McGregor down the road. But I think more likely it's, you know, McGregor sits out and just waits for either Khabib, or if it's Diaz, if that works out. I think the two roads there are that. I just don't see him being that interested in Ferguson right now for whatever reason. I just don't see him doing that. But I think Khabib's going to get dinged pretty heavily for this. And I think they just want to prove a point. And as unfair as it is, you know, as he talks about, you know, the bus attack, I know he was saying that at the press conference last night, it's much different when you jump outside the cage and do all that. It's different. And, you know, thank God for, I guess, you know, Cormier and Rockhold being there to help calm things down or whatever, but it was wild. But I think he's going to get hit pretty badly for this. Do you think the same, or do you think he's going to get off?
I think everything you've laid out here makes logical sense. You know, with the Nevada commission, I think that in Vegas, the house never loses. And I think they're going to find whatever the magic sweet spot is to make it look like they're being tough on Khabib while also not being so tough that they scare him away from ever fighting and bringing in the gates that he's going to bring going forward. So a year sounds about right to me. Everything that you laid out in terms of the booking, again, it makes all logical sense, but, you know, I mean, we saw Khabib fight Ally Aquinta for a vacant championship a few months ago. So, you know, everything sounds good on paper there, Josh, but we have learned over the past couple of years that, none of this ever makes any sense. And they're just kind of running around like headless chickens trying to put out a fire, which is a weird mixed metaphor there, but you get what I'm saying.
Well done, Dave. Well done. It's like you're a writer or something. let's see. So what else? So out of last night, obviously this just kind of dominated just like everything. And obviously mainstream sports, and we'll be talking about, they've been talking about today, but obviously with the, you know, the weekday shows, they'll be chatting more about this week. So it'll be interesting to see how kind of the narrative goes there and what have you. But let's see. I mean, for the rest of the show, you know, the main card, let's see. Obviously, Tony Ferguson and Pettis was great. And I really wish we had seen that third round. And I have this feeling that maybe we'll see these guys go at each other with a main event on a, ESPN show someday, or maybe even, you know, I don't necessarily think I basically think we're going to see him go five rounds at some point. That's my hope at some point. But my two takeaways was with Ferguson is really weird and weird. I don't know in an endearing way, if that makes sense. Right. I think there's, I don't want to say Xbox heat, but there's sometimes when there's weird and quirky, and then there's sometimes where it's just like, okay, this is just really, really strange. And I think he's, this week he kind of floated in that really, really strange territory. And I like weird people, believe you me. But he's, you know, he's kind of something else. The other thing is now with Pettis, when he was, I think it was in the first round, or maybe it was in the second round, he was on mount, and he just kind of like stood up, not stood up, but kind of just postured up and like smiled and was like, basically kind of did that thing of like, I love being in these type of wars and that type of thing.
Yep.
I think that was where his title aspirations died. And I think he is going to try to take this Eddie Alvarez, you know, champion of violence or whatever the hell he was talking about some time ago. I think he is all about just getting in these brawls now. And I don't think he is. I think he's pretty far away from getting any type of title shot or aspirations, but I think he is now going to be, based on that, I don't know what it was. I think he's now interested in being an entertaining fighter and a guy that makes a ton of money by being entertaining, maybe a Justin Gaethje type or something like that, where I don't know, you know, health-wise how that's going to do, but I just got that feeling that he crossed that threshold into some place that, you know, who knows where it's going to end up leading out.
You know, I'm fine with that. Yep.
Me too.
It's just a disappointed, disappointing it was not to get a third round. I actually applaud Duke Rufus, his trainer, for stopping that fight, because the fight was starting to go south for Anthony at the end of that round. And if his hand was broken as badly as he said it is, at this stage of Anthony's career, I don't know. Maybe I'm still overreacting to what we saw from Raquel Pennington in her corner a few months ago. But, you know, Showtime has started to have, like, that spirit again in his fights. And you alluded to it. And maybe it is that he's going to become a brawling for dollars type in his later stage of his career here, as opposed to a championship-level fighter. But I've really enjoyed seeing flashes of the old Showtime Pettis over these last few fights of his. And if not sending Anthony Pettis out to the slaughter in the third round, you know, saves him enough damage that we get to see a few more of those fun fights, then I'm cool with that. And I agree with you on Tony. The thing with Tony is, yeah, he is a weird bird, and he's never going to be that A-side main eventer. But when the fight starts, no matter how strange he is, that translates into just a transcendent, just tornado of action, an absolute whirlwind that, you know, you almost can't even describe. And, you know, if Dana White still has the promotional moxie he certainly had 10 or 15 years ago, then he should be able to build up Tony Ferguson to the point where if he's the B-side against some of the bigger name guys, and then those fights should be able to sell. So, yeah, those are pretty much my takeaways from that fight.
A couple other surprising notes from last night. I was surprising, but actually, yeah, they are surprising. It surprised me. There was no ad for the MSG show, which you would think, obviously being a big show on paper, that they would do some sort of promo or something like that. They did nothing. The only thing was for the UFC show in Moncton, of all places, right? With Volkan Ozdemir. I was surprised by that. And I thought it was telling because, one, they have not officially announced that fight yet, which makes me think that maybe they are trying to figure out something else big, and perhaps as simple as making Diaz Poirier five rounds. But at this point, I think the die is cast there with how they kind of book these things. Maybe they're trying to book some sort of surprise or something like that. But I think that was telling. And then two is they did not announce the Jones-Gustafson rematch officially for the end of the year. And I was thinking, like, usually these big shows, they do something where, because they have this captive audience, it's a large audience, they do something to keep the buzz going, like, especially for the casuals, being, oh, I have to get that. I have to get that. And they didn't do anything like that last night. I was surprised.
Yeah, it was surprising. And also, you know, it also shows just how difficult this matchmaking game has become in the WME era, where you don't have the, you know, Lorenzo Fertitta was always the good cop in these situations who somehow managed to smooth over things when Dana stepped on toes, and he's gone. And, you know, you don't have a Joe Silva in there who's kind of the little bit of strong arm muscle in the matchmaking. And I think that has been kind of just reaping its ugly head there over and over in these sort of situations. I do have to laugh a little bit about the MSG thing. See, now I'm just channeling my Red Sox fan, anti-New York vibe I'm on right now. But really, people in New York have to act like Madison Square Garden is just so precious that it has to have an over-the-top main event every time. This card already has Diaz and Poirier, Rockhold and Weidman, Adesanya and Brunson, Jacare against David Branch. That on its own, those four fights plus any other fight already makes up one of the best main cards you're going to have all year long. So, but no, you know, New Yorkers are precious, and this building that the Knicks have stunk out for 40 years is somehow magical, and they have to have a super fight. So that's how we ended up in this situation.
I like
and,
it.
And with the end of the year card, I mean, you know, the rumblings that have been going around is that, you know, the UFC is trying to get the light heavyweight belt off of Cormier. And if I was Daniel Cormier and I was as good as a company man as I've been, and I've worked as hard to get into that situation as he had, I wouldn't let it go without a fight either. So, you know, we have to see how that did that. Jones and Gustafson is also tied into whatever sort of decision-making DC makes. So I'm not surprised they haven't announced that yet, because they probably haven't figured it out.
So we've gone talked a few minutes about David Price, talked about UFC 229 and all that. I do want to give you a chance to talk about Bola, which you just went to recently. And obviously you've been bouncing around quite a bit, going to these different PWG shows and so on. What's stuck out to you, or what's really like on your mind when it comes to the new PWG experience out of the not the Eagles Club or whatever, the Elks Lodge or whatever they were working in before?
The Globe. Used to be at the VFW, I'm sorry, the American Legion Hall in Reseda, which is kind of like, calling out Los Angeles is kind of like when ECW would say they were running in Boston, but they were actually out of Wonderland in Revere, one of those type of things.
Yeah.
You know, look, all right, I came along in the very tail end of the Reseda experience. It was great. It was a very unique environment that can't be replicated, but they picked up at the Globe Theater without missing a beat. It's a completely different environment, but it's just as cool of an environment. It's the Globe Theater is a theater. There's a whole on Broadway in Los Angeles. There are a bunch of theaters from the 1920s back before the city kind of sprawled out the way it did. But they've all been refurbished, and they're just really cool, ornate old cinemas. And it's a completely different experience than Reseda, but it's pretty awesome in and of itself. And I went through to all three nights of Bola this year, and it was an experience. I mean, it was among the greatest experiences of a wrestling fan. And, you know, going back to being a fan since like 1982 or something like that. There's something about taking it all in as a whole, you know, and seeing the build over the course of the weekend and wondering, man, that was incredible. How are they going to top this? And then seeing them do it, I don't know how many of you listeners out there are ever actually going to get out to Los Angeles for one PWG show, much less going to all three nights of Battle of Los Angeles. But if you're a wrestling fan who's listening to this, you have like your own little personal bucket list of stuff you want to see as a wrestling fan in your lifetime, then you should be going through Battle of Los Angeles on there.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, that would be obviously, yeah, that's at the top of the list. And now they go to slightly bigger venues is a chance for maybe a few more people to get to it. So yeah, we'll, so if they go next year, will they be able to get autographs from you or what?
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said when they, so it, say some of our listeners are go out to Bola for the first time for next year, are they going to be able to get autographs from you, or are you going to be charging, or are you working a gimmick table, or what?
I'm going to do the $5 Polaroid kind of babyface thing. I'll dress up like Ricky Morton, and that's my game plan for next year.
Ricky Morton, that's a name you pulled out to dress up as. Impressive.
Can I tell you?
The wig and everything. I hope that's the case. Let's see. So I think that's good. So give the people obviously a chance of where to follow you on Twitter if they're not already, where to read some of your work. Obviously, all the stuff coming out of 229. The microphone is yours.
So Twitter. My Twitter handle is Dave Doyle MMA. DaveDoyleMMA. Same with my professional Facebook page, and my work can be found on MMAfighting.com and Yahoo Sports.
Good stuff, Dave Doyle. Appreciate the Sunday check-in. As always, go Patriots, go Red Sox, and go legal system as we go. Not the legal system. Go regulation as the Nevada State Athletic Commission tries to figure out what to do with Khabib Magomedov. Dave Doyle, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Have a great rest of your weekend. All righty. Big thanks for Dave Doyle for spending part of his Sunday with me. You can follow him on Twitter. Read his work all over the place. Sorry about the last part of the conversation there. So he was talking more about Bola. Cell phone reception is not exactly the best, but I think you got probably the meat and potatoes that talk. And yeah, I think with that we'll call it good. So thanks to all you guys for listening. Easy for me to say. Thanks to all you for listening. As always, a lot of choices in your podcast day, and greatly appreciate you spending any time with me or any of the other great hosts on WrestlingObserver.com. Coming up this week, obviously, Bellator, two shows, Friday and Saturday, with Mitrione and Bader, and we have Fedor and Chael finally getting that other bracket set for the heavyweight tournament and see what's going on there. And again, if I'm able to find myself around a press conference or anything like that this week, I will certainly let you guys know on Twitter, at Josh Nason. And yeah, it should be another fun week, and yeah, we'll see what happens with the melee at the mobile, or whatever we'll call it. So, again, thank you. This has been Josh Nason's Punch-Out. I am Josh Nason, and until next time, insert catchphrase here.